Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajaka Acharya Stotara Satsi Srivan Esi Bhakti Vedant Saman Prabhupad Ki Jai His confounder Acharya Srila Prabhupad Ki Jai Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivrajaka Acharya Stotara Satsi Srivan Bhakti Siddhant Sarasati Thakur Ki Jai Nantagoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem se kal Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Siddhaita Gadadhar Siva Sadhi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Mayapur Dham Ki Jai, Jagannath Swami Ki Jai, Gangamayi Ki Jai, Jamunamayi Ki Jai, Tulsi Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. Hare Krishna. So, we're going to read a verse from Bhagavad Gita as it is. The translation and purports are by Srila Prabhupada. So, we'll read a verse from the last chapter of the Gita, chapter 18, text 57. The Sanskrit is Chetasa sarva karmani mahi sanyasya matparaha buddhi yogam upashitya machittak satatam bhava. Translation. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Prabhupada's purport for this verse. When one acts in Krishna consciousness, one does not act as the master of the world. Like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. A servant has no individual independence, but acts only on the master's order. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. That person simply discharges their duty faithfully in terms of the Lord's order. Now, one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna. But when Krishna is not present, how should one act? If one acts according to Krishna's direction in this book, as well as under the guidance of Krishna's representative, then the result will be the same. The Sanskrit word matparaha is very important in this verse. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. And while working in that way, one should think of Krishna only. Quote, I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna, unquote. That's how one should think. While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, one should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. That sort of duty is not in the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. One should act according to Krishna's order. This is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes through disciplic succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. So that was Prabhupada's translation purport. Now I'll say a few words on this verse. First, let's look closely at the Sanskrit, see exactly what Krishna is saying here. Chetasa sarva karmani mahi sanyasya matparaha buddhi yogam upasitya machittak satatam bhava. So the verb, the independent clause grammatically in this sentence, this Sanskrit sentence, is machittak satatam bhava, which means in Sanskrit become a person, become a person, or be a person whose chitta, whose consciousness, whose mind is in me. So that's the, so to speak, the independent clause. And Krishna says you should do this by various means, which are, for example, chetasa, with your intelligence or with your consciousness, sarva karmani mahi sanyasya, offer all of your activities to me, and matpara, take me as supreme, depending upon buddhi yoga. There's a lot of things here in this verse that I'd like to explain. I'm just kind of laying all this out, and it's I want to talk about it and show there's something very logical and important going on here. Krishna says here, buddhi yogam upashitya, that one should rely upon or depend upon or take shelter of buddhi yoga. Buddhi yoga. This is one of the most important terms in the Bhagavad Gita. Buddhi means intelligence. It not only means intelligence, but it specifically means analytic intelligence. It means that understanding, that intelligence by which you are able to discriminate. For example, this food is healthy, this food is not healthy. If I perform this activity, I will be safe. If I do this other activity, I will be in danger, or I may harm myself. And so on. If I do this, it's right. For example, if someone sees the obvious that it's wrong to harm innocent people, and it is right to help people, to do good to people, that type of discrimination, this is right, that's wrong, this is good, that's bad, this is safe, that's dangerous, this is healthy, that's unhealthy. That kind of intelligence is called buddhi in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, the word yoga, as Prabhupada explains, means linking. So, and yoga also means in Sanskrit, it means many things. It's an important word in Sanskrit that has a wide range of meanings. It also means practice or application. In other words, there's theory and practice. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses the two terms Sankhya and Yoga. Sankhya meaning philosophy or theory, and yoga meaning practice. So buddhi yoga also means the practice of intelligence, not simply to have some good ideas in your head, but then do the opposite. But it means to actually apply my best intelligence. Whatever is my best understanding, whatever is my clearest intelligence, I actually live by it. I act upon it. I'm not a hypocrite. That's the sense of buddhi yoga. To act on, or act according to, or to apply your best understanding of life. That really is what buddhi yoga means in a very practical sense. And Krishna says we should really stand firm on that. We should rely upon integrity. It's another way of saying integrity. Because after all, if I know that something's right, but I don't do it, or if I know something's wrong and I do it, then there's an issue of integrity. After all, if you think of what the word integrity means, to integrate things means to put them all together. So if my brain's over here and my heart's over there and my bodily behavior is somewhere else, even in the literal sense, there's a lack of integrity. I'm not integrated. Everything's not united. And so integrity, in that sense, is really the opposite of hypocrisy. Integrity and hypocrisy, these are really opposites. And so Krishna says, if we have this spiritual integrity where we are acting by our best understanding, and we are offering all of our activities to God, to Krishna. Now, the word sannyasya, here we have the verb, the indeclinable participle of this verb. It's interesting because from the same word in Sanskrit, we also have the word sannyasa, which often means, is translated, renunciation. And a sannyasi is someone who renounces. Specifically, it means giving up sex and giving up, let's say, private or domestic life and dedicating oneself fully to spiritual activities. This, of course, is the culmination of spiritual life. It's not something that everyone can do immediately. But there is a sense that when we become very advanced spiritually, we fall so deeply in love with God or with Krishna, we are so inspired by reality, which is spiritual, that we actually become bored by or disinterested in mundane pursuits. But what's interesting is that this word sannyasya, this verb, which means, from which you get the word renunciation, doesn't mean to reject things. It means to put them in the right place. The word sannyasa, which is often translated renunciation, is actually in Sanskrit made of three elements, sun, ni, and asa, which literally means putting things in the right place. That's literally what the word means, putting something in the right place. So because we are part of God, we are part of Krishna, that's just the way it is. That's the way we exist. That's the first existential fact about us. That's the first and primary fact about our existence, is that we're part of God. Our existence is part of God's existence. We exist within God. And therefore, there's a natural relationship, which is the natural relationship between a part and a whole. For example, to give Prabhupada's example, which is derived from the Bhagavatam, my hand is part of my body. And so there is a natural relationship between the hand and the body. The hand serves the body, and the body acts to protect the hand. So there are natural, organic relationships between parts and wholes. So to say that we are part of God means logically that there is a natural kind of relationship between ourselves and God. And another example that's given is yathātaror mūlini sechena. We water the root of a tree, and by watering the root of the tree, we water the whole tree. That's the only way trees can be watered, through the root. If someone has a more democratic idea that no, for too long roots have been getting all the water and we need to think about the other parts of the tree, and so someone tries to water the other parts of the tree, you can't do that. That's not how you water trees. You water the root. And that's what it means to be the root of something. To be, if you think of what the word root means, to be the root of something means that it's the source from which the rest, everything else grows. It's a system in which there's a source and everything grows from that source. That's what it means to be a root. The Bhagavatam explains that Krishna is the root of our existence. So that means that by pleasing Krishna, by pleasing God, serving God, we are actually serving ourselves in the best possible way. So, this is Krishna consciousness. We are all pursuing our self-interest as we understand it. I mean, the reason you sit in a certain position and not in another position is because you're more comfortable that way. Unless you're trying to inflict pain on yourself, and then, in which case you... But whatever your purpose is, I mean, if your purpose is to be comfortable, or if your purpose is to inflict pain on yourself for some reason, we, at every moment, if you think about it, we are pursuing what we understand to be our self-interest. Whether it's our physical self-interest, our emotional self-interest, our intellectual self-interest, our spiritual... At every moment, we are trying to do what we think is best for ourselves. And there's a type, there's actually a position which is called in philosophy altruistic egotism, or egoistic altruism, your choice, which is the position in which someone recognizes that actually the way I can make myself happy is by pleasing other people. That if I live a crudely selfish life, I actually won't be happy. In other words, if I completely ignore everyone else's interest and pleasure, ultimately I'm going to be a very lonely, frustrated, miserable person. And by sometimes, in appropriate ways, pleasing other people, I will be happier as a social creature. And apart from, let's say, this realization that I will be happier as a social creature than as a hermit, there's also sometimes just the realization that if I act in a noble way, if I actually try to do good for its own sake, that makes me happy, when I simply try to make other people happy. And so, at every moment, no matter how enlightened our sense of selfishness is, we are pursuing our interest. Prahlad, the great sage Prahlad, says that Natevidu Sartha Katingi Vishnu. Ultimately, people don't realize that their highest interest, their highest self-interest, is Krishna. Their highest self-interest is Krishna. Now, someone can raise the philosophical point, do we ever fully transcend selfishness? In other words, if someone actually understands, hey, I'm part of God, I'm part of Krishna, and I believe what I heard at my local Hare Krishna temple, I actually can be happiest if I serve Krishna? At that point, is someone still acting selfishly, but perhaps in the most enlightened sense of selfishness? This is an interesting point. And I think undoubtedly there is a stage in spiritual practice where someone is consciously pursuing what they feel is best for themselves. And this is to some extent encouraged. Prabhupada would constantly give this argument that, look, you'll be happy if you chant Hare Krishna. If you try to understand this movement, if you try to follow this practice, this process, you'll be much happier. So Prabhupada himself and all the great teachers have appealed to our intelligence, saying, look, you're trying to do what's best for yourself. This is what's best for you. So do this. And yet at the same time, ultimately, and this is the sublime conclusion of our teaching, ultimately there is a state of pure love. There is a state of love which is so strong and so deep and so pure that the lover is actually not pursuing his or her selfish interest. It is actually pure love. And this is a state of Krishna consciousness, where we experience pure love for Krishna and pure love for every living creature, because every living being is part of Krishna. It is a fact that in that state we experience the highest happiness, but the fact that we experience the highest pleasure does not mean that we are pursuing it. In other words, you can just wake up one day and just feel incredibly happy. It doesn't mean you were trying to be happy, you just are. And so the fact of being happy, the fact of experiencing very great pleasure, does not mean that you have selfish motives or that you are pursuing that pleasure. It means you're just really happy. And that's the state of Krishna consciousness. That's what happens. In fact, the more we give up even the enlightened pursuit of our own interest and simply try to serve Krishna, the more we experience the highest pleasure. It's one of those great ironies of life that the more I try to be happy, the less I am. The more I try to serve, the happier I am. It's one of the great ironies of life. So, anyway, that's Krishna consciousness in a nutshell. So, any questions on these points? I will be very kind to you and not go on speaking for a very long time. So, any questions on these points? No? Yes. He's advising Arjuna to... Why is he speaking to Krishna? To Arjuna? Yes. So you're saying, why is he talking to Arjuna?
Yeah, because Arjuna's soul is nothing but Krishna's soul.
Yeah, well, let's back up a step here. First of all, Krishna's speaking to Arjuna because he's a nice guy. The good news is that God is a nice guy. God is not the monster that some people say he is, where... You know, one wrong move and I'll fry you forever. I mean, that's not... that's just not nice. I mean, let's say you have a child and you love your child, and like all children, you know, the child is somewhat rebellious or somewhat whatever. I mean, that's just, you know, that's life. So therefore, you pour kerosene on your kid and light him on fire because he didn't obey you. I mean, that's pretty evil. That's pretty monstrous. That's not God. God does not... The real God is a nice guy. To say that we are part of Krishna doesn't mean we're the whole. In other words, the hand is part of the body, but it's not the whole body. And Krishna is not simply the sum of all the parts of individual souls. Krishna is himself independent of us. You follow? It's like in the material world, if I take a piece of paper and tear it into little pieces... There's no more sheet of paper, there's just the pieces. But Krishna can expand himself into many individual souls, but he's still Krishna. And Krishna has his own spiritual body, his own senses. It's not that Krishna merely enjoys through us. Krishna has his own independent, autonomous, supreme existence. So even though we're part of him, he still exists independent and beyond all the parts. And he's speaking to Arjuna because he's a nice guy, as I said. So, there's no other point. Perhaps we'll end here. Thank you all very much. And Hare Krishna.
Yo vuelvo para la realidad.